marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
As we come marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city their ancient call for bread.
Lemi, Umi Maja Falao, Chang Yolo Nitoe, Yolo de Lo, O Musuben, Wachang Yemi, Nalawe, Konyme, O Mise, Unye Wate, Achang Sogwedo Di, Unagwele Wea.
Good afternoon. This is the Bread and Roses Show. I am your host for today's edition of the Bread and Roses Show. My name is Elliot Terry. And the voice you heard in the background was that of Angelique Kidjo. Let me tell you that this is WXOJ LP 103.3 in Northampton. And we are streaming live on the web at, valleyfreeradio.org. It's Ann Feeney singing our theme song, the Bread and Roses song. And good afternoon. Today on the Bread and Roses Show, we'll be talking about the march. The march for climate change and the issues surrounding climate change and global warming, and the movement that has crossed borders, so to speak. But I want to let you know about Angelique Kidjo. Angelique Kidjo, of course, is a Grammy Award-winning singer, dancer, performer from Benin, Africa. She is appearing this Thursday, actually the 30th, next Thursday, the 30th of October at 7:30 p.m. at the Fine Arts Center Concert Hall at the University of Massachusetts. And I play Angelique Kidjo. That little clip was taken off of Democracy Now! On the Equinox, September 21st, at the Great March in New York. And she was being interviewed by Amy Goodman and sang that piece. Well, Angelique Kidjo will be also, before the concert, giving a talk, a pre-performance talk at 6:30 p.m. at the University Club. And that's at the University of Massachusetts. Now, Angelique Kidjo says in the promotion, Africa's premier diva. She has collaborated with Carlos Santana, Peter Gabriel, Alicia Keys, Bono, and more. And she last appeared in the Valley, I believe, in 2007 at the Calvin Theater in Northampton. I was lucky enough to see her there. But she is also a Goodwill Ambassador for UNICEF and has been since 2002, as well as a campaigner for women's rights in Africa. And she will be at the university speaking again, another free talk on Wednesday, the day before the performance. And the topic is Activism Through Music, Wednesday, October 20th, 29th, 6 to 7 p.m. at Bowker Auditorium. And that is free. A conversation with Angelique Kidjo. The 21st of September, 2014, the largest single march and rally in the history of New York occurred in that city, conjunct with a climate summit that was being held at the United Nations. Estimates of up to 500,000 people, marchers, call for action to end the crisis of global warming and climate change. Their focus was and is the International Climate Agreement, scheduled to be signed in 2015. In some recent developments toward that end, last night the BBC reported that the European Union member states had agreed on a 40% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030. That is a major step, and a 27% reliance on alternative energy systems. Perhaps a bold step or too little too late. Activists will certainly be quick to judge. Despite the record numbers, doubts persist as to whether national leaders will take heed or conduct business as usual. But what was demonstrated in New York City in September was more than just banners and slogans. It was true also of the Occupy demonstrations that this march was characterized by a coalition of unions, of groups from environmental leaders like 350.org, labor unions, peace and anti-war groups, Native American and international indigenous leaders, as well as Occupy veterans, social justice activists, and political leaders. In other words, there was depth and breadth in the movement. The march was peaceful and no incidents of police violence was reported. But when the march ended and the buses left for home, my guest today asked, where do we go from here? Today on the Bread and Roses Show, we'll be looking for answers to that question from Dr. Marty Nathan. Marty Nathan is a founding member of Climate Action Now, but she has been a lifelong fighter for social justice and economic justice and is co-founder of the Markham Nathan Fund for Social Justice. In response to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, she helped organize the Alliance for Peace and Justice in Northampton. And along with being a wife and mother, she is a physician at Bay State Brightwood Clinic in Springfield. That said, Marty Nathan is right now stuck in traffic. So, while we are waiting for Dr. Marty Nathan to arrive, we will listen to this.
Thank you.
That was Urena, and that still is Urena in the background. That is a group from Bolivia. We just heard Carmendela. And we are waiting for Marty Nathan, who is stuck in traffic. And while we wait, I will give you pass on this information that tomorrow, October 25th, at 7:30 p.m., the Gaia Star Goddess Show will be appearing at the Academy of Music. The Gaia Star Goddess Band was here today at Valley Free Radio, right in this studio, performing. And before the concert, the Anti-Western Mass Pipeline Rally is occurring in Pulaski Park from 6 to 7 p.m. If, sure, you don't have to be told about the pipeline, the proposed Tennessee Valley Kinder Morgan pipeline that is set to tear up much of the northern tier of Massachusetts on its way north. Well, there's a rally in opposition to the pipeline at Pulaski Park tomorrow, 6 to 7 p.m. And then the Gaia Goddesses will be performing at the Academy of Music. So, this is the Bread and Roses Show, and we are waiting for Dr. Marty Nathan, who is stuck in traffic, but on her way. And while we are waiting, I think we'll hear a little bit of this.
I'm waiting in the Coney Island of my mind for the return of Lawrence Ferlinghetti. I'm waiting sad and lonely, trying to find the next new true savior, but I bet he's been detained. I'm waiting for the lights to come on and the souls of the lost and brokenhearted, for the wounded to be whole. I'm waiting for the sweet smiles to return to the faces of lovers betrayed and burned. I'm waiting for the river of our sorrows to run dry for a minute, a day, or a whole month. I'm waiting for balance between the bold and the meek. I'm waiting for us all to heed Rassan's seek and listen. I'm waiting for a sweet funkadelic embrace, for my joys and my sorrows to show on my face, to claim every tear and whole body high for us all and accept that we're all gonna die. I'm waiting to shake my fist at God and hear God say being God is goddamn hard. I'm praying for the hopes of our prayers to come true, and I'm looking for me and hoping to find you in what's left of heaven. I'm waiting for fists to become open hands. I'm waiting for when the other shoe finally lands. I'm waiting for the heavens to bring their sweet rain and for this thirsty earth to know spring again. I'm waiting for a plane to fly me home. I'm waiting to lay down my weary bones of despair, disappointment, discourage, and rage. I'm waiting to gently turn the final page. I'm waiting to feel the delicate light of a thousand stars on your body tonight. I'm waiting for a night when I dream for you and for the tears you cry for your dreams coming true. I'm waiting for a moment that will wait for me. I'm waiting to get in my own bathroom just to see how I look or who's in the mirror today. I'm waiting to hear the Pope finally say, hey, I made a mistake, don't be so uptight. I'm waiting for the final word on wrong from right. I'm waiting for the day when all the cars ride into Wunderwasser's spiral and disappear inside. I am waiting for the weight of the world to be lifted. I am waiting for the weight of the world to be lifted, not from our shoulders, but to them. We are gifted with powers so far beyond measure. I'm waiting for us to claim this burden, this treasure. I'm waiting for our tears to fall back in a sky of infinite forgiveness for you and I. I am waiting for our sorrows to flow to a sea of finite tomorrows for an infinite humanity. I am waiting and waiting at the end of the line. I'm waiting for the moment when we actually find all the time from the question where did the time go. And I am waiting for the moment we all simultaneously know peace.
Johnny Vaca. Something spoken word called I Am Waiting. But we are waiting no longer. Dr. Marty Nathan is here. So, Marty Nathan, it is a pleasure to welcome you once again to the Bread and Roses show.
Thank you very much, Elliot.
Yeah, let me say so long to Tony. Well, I talked about the march. I did the intro and talked about the big march on the 21st. And I mentioned how that brought together disparate groups, environmental leaders, labor unions, peace and anti-war groups, Native American, international indigenous leaders, as well as Occupy veterans, social justice, and the like. And that's what stuck in my mind was the coalition and the massive amount of work that went into bringing that together. So, Marty, your answer in part to the question, where do we go from here? Actually, I had told the listeners that when the march ended and the buses left for home, you had said, where do we go from here? And in part, your answer was to organize a climate action march in Springfield this past Monday, along with Arise Action and others in Springfield. As a result of that effort, if I could quote from Mass Live, the city council unanimously adopted a six-part resolution on climate change Monday night. The resolution, which is non-binding, calls for Mayor Dominic J. Sarno to create and implement a climate change action plan to fit with the city's environmental priorities. Are you pleased with the result? And can you talk about what was important to you about this Springfield march?
It was wonderful. Yes, I am very pleased, although it really is only the first step. The next step is to make sure that Mayor Sarno does his duty and spends the city's money in order to hire someone to implement the climate change plan that the city adopts. That climate change plan itself needs to reflect the real needs of a city that where people, many people are very poor and out of jobs and the air is dirty, in particularly in poor areas. Industries, many of them are polluting, and children and the elderly have high rates of asthma, particularly in poor areas. And the climate change plan can be instrumental in changing the situation for people right now. The same emissions that put carbon dioxide in the air put nitrous oxide and particulate matter and ozone into the atmosphere as well. And those things make people sick on the ground, give them asthma, emphysema, and heart attacks and strokes. So if we can cut emissions of carbon dioxide, we will also make the health of people in Springfield better, and keep kids out of the emergency room and out of the hospital, and keep the elderly from dying. As a physician, I'm pretty tuned in to that problem. The other thing we can do is, as Naomi Klein talks about in her book, and I really recommend that everybody that listens to this pick up that book either at the library or at your locally owned bookstore and read This Changes Everything, because she talks about how this is dealing with this climate crisis is really an opportunity to change our society and make it the society that we want and deserve. We can and must take on the big polluters who just so happen to also be the big corporations that make all the money and run all the politics and keep our democracy from working, we must confront them. And at the same time, we must make our neighborhoods and our cities and our countryside something that is livable and binds us together rather than tearing us apart. Specifically in North Springfield, which is where I'm working with some wonderful people from the North End Organizing Network. Hats off to them. We talk about having a neighborhood where the sidewalks are walkable, where there are bike paths, so the many of us who ride bicycles aren't threatened with death every time we get on them. There are solar panels on the roofs of public housing and gardens in the back or the front. And though that public housing is insulated so that electricity and heating bills are cut. Right now, most people can't afford their bill. And I shouldn't say most people, but many people cannot afford those bills. But that shouldn't be that way. There must be, through the struggle to combat the climate crisis, there must be investment in our cities, in public transportation. The buses need to go where people need to go. When they need to go, there need to be more of them. They need to be cheap or free, and they need to be accessible. There need to be places to stand outside of the rain. I'm now a bus. The reason I'm late was because I am now trying very hard not to be a car commuter by any means necessary. Wow. And part of that is using the bus, which I tend to love, except when, as frequently happens, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work. Most people who use the bus nowadays are poor people. You know, they don't have a car. They get around by buses and bicycles and walking. And we need to make real first-class transportation, public transportation in the Pioneer Valley. The reason I am late is because that just simply didn't work today. So this is an opportunity. It's not just a crisis. This is the opposite of shock doctrine. If those of us who read Naomi Klein's last book, and where she talks about how the powers that be take crises and make them into ways to essentially screw us all, we need to take this crisis and turn it around into creating communities that are humane and human and caring and support families and support health, at the same time that we pay attention to our beautiful environment.
You know,
long answer,
yes,
short question.
Actually, you've touched on all of the themes and all of the questions that I had.
Oh, great.
And
can we go now?
No, we have to dig. We have to dig. And, you know, in Native American belief, there is no such thing as late. So you are right on time.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, you are. This is not being videoed. We're on radio. But you have a lovely outfit on, and it seems to evoke the Hindu New Year celebration. Were you aware?
No, I didn't know that. Thank you, Elliot. I didn't know. I just knew it was a really pretty jacket.
Well, it is Diwali, the Hindu New Year.
Great.
Yeah. But I had a question about the Naomi Klein book. It's one of the themes that seem to dominate, at least my perception in New York, the message brought by Naomi Klein and her new book, This Changes Everything. We'll say it again. Capitalism versus the Environment is the subtitle of that book, which really frames the issue in concrete economic terms and ties into the Occupy movement. And did that strike a chord with you? I guess it did. And how effective do you think that message was or is?
Oh, I think for those of us, and there's so many of us that are focused on the asteroid coming our way that is climate change. I actually don't like that allusion that all that well, because an asteroid hits suddenly, and this is something that just gets worse and worse over time. But there are tipping points in it that make things much worse from there on out. So it works and it doesn't work. But anyway, for those of us who have been watching this thing develop, I think Naomi Klein's book provides us with the kind of deep thought and well-structured political and economic arguments that we need to get by. I mean, because she talks about the macro and the micro, that overall there has to be massive investment in the public sector at the same time that there is banning, there is outlawing of the things that are destroying that are destroying the atmosphere and giving us climate change. And that there, it allows us as organizers and human beings with families a way to see forward. I've heard critiques of capitalism as being antithetical to climate change, and I agree overall, but that doesn't help. If you just say that, what are you going to do with that? Naomi Klein tells about the things that we need to change. I think that is it's not her starting point, but that's her overarching view, that capitalism is antithetical to the struggle against climate change, because further development, as capitalism needs expansion in order to survive. But she's able to take that and say, okay, what can we as ethical activists and organizers do with that right here and now? What coalitions do we make? And what do we ask for? What works? What hasn't worked? Like, she goes in depth. You got to excuse me because I'm only halfway through the book. has a wonderful section about the big greens. And there are some big greens and there are other big greens. The NRDC and the which is the National Resources Defense Council, and the Nature Conservancy, and I think the Environmental Defense Fund have created deep, deep ties to the polluting industries, so that their ability to really critique what is going on is very limited and has led us into a morass. She talks about the Nature Conservancy drilling for oil and gas on one of their reserves, for instance, which is just awful, in a word. And so she talks about how we must be able to critique the deepest parts of the system that we're living in order to be able to combat this thing which is changing everything, which is climate change. There was one of my friends from the North and who was leading the march on Monday, who had a wonderful sign that he had written, and if my Spanish is wrong, please forgive me. It said, "Cambio sistémico, no cambio climático," which means systemic change, not climate change. That was just wonderful. That was. What Naomi says, Naomi Klein says, but she says it in such a way that you can put it into action. We can fight for climate justice for the poorest among us who are suffering all the abuses of our system, but that includes the health abuses caused by emissions. We must fight for them to have communities that are living and thriving and sustainable. Okay, and those are our allies, plus everybody else. But we need to keep our eyes on how we change our system so that we combat climate change.
You know, I've got two questions in that regard, and I'm going to see if I can combine them somehow. You know, one of the other things that stood out for me about the march in New York was the coalition aspect, which you talked about. The need that you said, Naomi Klein talks about the need to make these connections across class and race and national boundaries. And a leading voice, as they were in Occupy, were the labor unions, which was a surprise to many. And can you give us a sense of the atmosphere on that day in New York? Speak about the connections being made between groups finding that common cause. And there's even an event tonight. As we speak right now at Smith College, that's representative of that talk by the representative from the NAACP.
Oh, yes. Jackie Patterson, who Climate Action Now had as our keynote speaker a year ago, and that in the beginning of the process that led up to the march and the city council vote on Monday. Jackie Patterson, who is fantastic.
Right. And
please go, everybody.
So I want to bring this to Springfield. And my other question was about that big if that you said way back at the beginning, if the mayor appoints and follows the plan. And let me tell the listeners that the city council in a resolution in Springfield calls for the mayor to hire or designate a full-time employee to work exclusively on creating a plan to assess the preparedness for climate change mitigation and adaptation. I'm reading from the article, actually from your newsletter. Included in the plan is a call for coordinating efforts to reduce greenhouse gases in industry, transportation, agriculture, waste generation, and commercial and residential fuel consumption, educating the community, blah, 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 which all sounds great. But even if the plan to address climate change is adopted by the city, there's no guarantee that it will be followed. Isn't a key here community awareness and opinion? How will that play out in Springfield? Is there a new grassroots consciousness growing in Springfield, communities that are connecting the dots? And what impact, if any, had the fight against the BioMS project galvanized awareness in climate change?
You just think up really simple questions, don't you, Elliot?
I can't help it.
Okay. Let's start with the issue of climate plan plus implementation. I think we did this right, but we have to keep doing it right. We brought together, by we I mean many people, brought together disparate, sometimes cantankerous parts of this community, all of whom had a common need to have a cleaner and more invested in city. And we brought them in all to the table, and they spoke, they marched, they spoke, they did their thing. And that is really the reason the city councilors, as one person said, were falling all over each other in order to support this thing that we weren't sure was going to pass. They really, it was such a powerful movement and so representative of the city as a whole that it really, they would have had trouble saying no. So that's a great start, and we have to keep that up. We have to keep this coalition together, and we have to grow it to include all the people that didn't know that it was happening this time around, because everybody has a vested interest. Everybody in the city has a vested interest in this. Now, there are others who have vested interest in keeping polluting. They also breathe, but maybe they figure they can get their air other places. Anyway, we have to go, we have to first create a plan that is a climate justice plan. And Michael Anbusi, who's wonderful on this, keeps pushing it. This is not just cut emissions. It is cut emissions so that poor people have better lives, okay? But then we have to push Mayor Sarno to make him just as aware of community pressure so that he doesn't have any choice but to invest in the city's money in employing this fellow. And see, this is a no-brainer. One of the reasons they must have this person is because the feds and the state are constantly, because there are, fortunately, there has been a corner that has been turned nationally and statewide. There are grants available to do the things that we need to do, but Springfield doesn't have anybody whose eyes are open and looking for those grants. And that has been pointed out over and over again by people who watch Springfield City, the city government. This thing would pay for itself. And more at the same time we get what we need for the people of the community. And we've met, I spend so much time in Springfield, I call it we, but there was just recently, apparently, and somebody, if there's anybody out there who knows otherwise, they can correct me, but apparently we missed a solarized mass grant from the state of Massachusetts. And so there's still not money available in the city of Springfield to solarize. Well, that's really not very helpful. So it would, the mayor must see that this is critical, ethically, historically, politically, in every single way. And it's also going to make the city the kind of money it needs to transform itself.
I think they're looking to MGM for that.
Unfortunately, that's true, and that's that was only the first part of your question, Elliot. Let me keep going here. Okay? The plan itself, that person who is hired must turn back to the people who got him hired and ask them what is needed, because they know. They have been thinking about that. There have been meetings throughout Springfield talking about these things, and people have their ideas, and those ideas need to be implemented in such a way that the people of Springfield get jobs out of this, for the solarization, for the creating of the gardens and the redoing houses, housing and windows and all that stuff, you know, the fixing the streets, making the bike paths, all that stuff, and the new bus drivers. And fortunately, Deval Patrick is going to put a Chinese company in East Springfield who's going to be making train cars for the MBTA in Boston. That's great, but we need to make them for Springfield too, or at least buses. It would be great to have light rail there too. Let's see. And all the way along here, people in the neighborhoods must be involved.
Well, that's where I was referencing the biomass struggle. Didn't that make that whole discussion must have created an awareness.
That is true, and then it's back on us, because the land court reversed the decision by the city not to allow the biomass, and so that struggle is back on the burner. So that needs to be woven into the struggle for a climate action plan. And the Springfield City Council, God bless them, voted unanimously to appeal that land court decision. But the mayor has given them no money to do that. So Arise and Climate Action Now are supporting finding a pro bono lawyer and raising funds in order to get the filing fees and all of those things in order to support the municipality. Is that something else?
In the very least, from what I understand about land court, it takes about a year for the case to come up. So
anyway, that's going to be woven into the discussion. And thank you, Elliot, for bringing that up, because that's going to be part of the climate action plan.
All right. Let's take a little break and get your breath. And we're going to listen to a little bit more of Angelique Kidjo. That was, again, Angelique Kidjo, who, as I said earlier, is appearing at the University of Massachusetts Fine Arts Center on the 30th, Thursday the 30th. And right before the 7:30 concert, there will be a talk, a pre-performance talk by Angelique at 6:30 p.m. at the University Club. And the day before, on Wednesday, October 29th, Angelique Kidjo will be at Bowker Auditorium from 6 to 7 p.m. in a free conversation with Angelique Kidjo titled Activism Through Music. Angelique Kidjo, who was at that was recorded at the Climate March by Amy Goodman. And this is the Bread and Roses Show. I am speaking. My name is Elliot Terry. I am speaking with Dr. Marty Nathan. We're talking about that climate march and the local events such as, let's see. I know you have to leave a little early. So one thing that stood out, Marty, for me in the Climate Action March in New York was the presence and leadership of the indigenous people, not only as a statement, but more as a recognition that the indigenous people worldwide and in the U.S. have been on the front line of the struggle with multinational oil, coal, mining, and transport, and who have which has all despoiled their lands and water for decades. Now we, middle and working class descendants of European colonists, are getting a taste of what that's about. The BP oil spill was the first shock, but locally here in Massachusetts, an opposition movement has erupted against plans by Tennessee Gas Kinder Morgan to build a 177-mile pipeline to carry methane gas to terminal points in Canada for export. Climate Action has been at the forefront of that opposition. What are the issues here and what's at stake?
What's at stake is, as always with climate issues, both the local environment as well as the future of the earth through climate change. The people, the hardest fighting people around this are people who are abutters or in the neighborhood of where they are going to put that pipeline. The Tennessee Gas Pipeline by Kinder Morgan is being placed, and they're using more flimsy walls for it. It's being placed frequently in areas where there is not high population density. And they thought that they could get away with it for some reason, thinking that people would not value farmland and wilderness areas and small towns as much as they do cities. So explosions, fires, leaks, and land devaluation just wouldn't matter. Nobody would notice it. That has turned out not to be the case at all, because the people whose land it's going over are really resisting this like crazy. And I just got to say, those are some amazing folks. But there's all, and the threat to the land over which the pipeline will go is massive. With similar pipelines, there have been explosions and fires and leaks that have destroyed buildings and polluted water and destroyed farmland. And people are very worried about that. But at the same time, the resistors are posing the overarching question as well of climate change. One of the things that the carbon industry has managed to spew, besides its toxics, is the lie that gas, natural gas, someone said that it just isn't natural and that word shouldn't be used, but that's the word that everybody knows and uses, that natural gas is a bridge energy source because it is not as toxic to the environment and climate change as is coal, which is really horrible. That's been disproved with time, although the fossil fuel companies have done their best to try to muddy the waters. Here, still, there was a wonderful study out of Cornell that showed that fracking, and this is fracked gas coming from the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania that will be going across our land to Drake it. Fracked gas in particular spews massive amounts of methane, which is a much more forceful and potent greenhouse gas than is carbon dioxide. And if you add things up, natural gas is not any less toxic to the environment than is coal.
All right, I know I have one more question before I let you scoot out of here. The battle lines in this struggle seem clear and, in fact, epical, with the bloated, powerful, and seemingly sociopathic fossil fuel corporations pitted against the people and the earth. But there is another player here that is invisible yet vital to the discussion. The hidden culprit for much of the CO2 released in the atmosphere is the Pentagon.
Oh, yes.
And its wars. According to an article in The Progressive in October of 2009, quoting a report from Oil Change International, the Iraq War had put at least 141 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent into the air, as much as adding 25 million cars to the roads. And that, the Iraq War itself had added more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere than 60% of the world's nations. Marty, back in 2009, you and others in the Alliance for Peace and Justice.
And you.
And myself formed a committee to bring this to light and to the environmental movements, the environmental costs of war and militarism. And you brought that message to New York City. How was that received? And what are your thoughts about that hidden culprit?
I just wrote a piece that should, I hope, go into the Gazette fairly soon about the new bombing of ISIS and how this is an environmental crime. And that the Pentagon should no longer be allowed to get off scot-free with what it is doing to the environment and to the atmosphere with the burning of fossil fuels and all of it's not just carbon dioxide by them. Particularly the jet fuel is worse than carbon dioxide. And in that, I count up the little that is known about how much greenhouse gases have been put in by the bombing of the Islamic State. And I call for an end to that as being not helpful in deterring the Islamic State. It really hasn't done much. Second, it's created hundreds of casualties whose family may adopt the ideology of the Islamic State. And the missed opportunity of all that money spent on that bombing that could have gone into the transformation of our economy and our society, like we're talking about, needs to happen. We need to rethink all of this. So, read my article coming up. Yes, we must take on the Pentagon, as if just taking on capitalism wasn't enough.
All right. Dr. Marty Nathan, on her way to receive an honorary award. What was the name of that? The McGovern Award at Smith College. And we are honored at the Bread and Roses Show to have had her here. Thank you so much, Marty. That's it for this week on the Bread and Roses Show.
And kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the